Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, February 23rd, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front pages with an article headlined "Hunger Levels Unprecedented: Food Banks Seek Volunteers, Donations Through Winter." Central Illinois. The prolonged sub-zero temperatures of January and February haven't slowed demand at food banks, but they make key items harder to secure. Fresh produce becomes harder to source and move during the winter months, and both Eastern Illinois Food Bank and the Midwest Food Bank report protein, dairy, and shelf-stable foods like soup and peanut butter remain among the most requested items. Volunteers, especially in January and February, are also harder to come by, creating added strain during a season when demand stays high. We know that we're seeking an unprecedented high need, and I don't think the weather is going to deter those neighbors that are seeking food assistance from getting out and utilizing the resources that we're able to provide, said Kelly Daly, president of CEO of Eastern Illinois Food Bank. USDA data shows that 18.3 million households experienced food insecurity in 2024, representing nearly 48 million people without consistent access to nutritious food. This compares with 13.5 million food insecure households in 2003. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank, which serves nearly 200 agency partners in 21 counties, reported more than 143,000 food insecure individuals within its area. Daly told Farm Week the food bank has continued operating under Arctic blast conditions because most of its work can't stop, and those neighbors do need that assistance right now. As part of the Feeding America network, Eastern Illinois Food Bank can source fresh produce from states with longer growing seasons, though Daly said they still try to work with Illinois farmers whenever possible. The Midwest Food Bank is facing similar need and demand for specific items, but as an independent food bank, CEO Eric Hodel said it relies primarily on donated food. Volunteers help pick up products from local grocery stores, and the organization, which works with more than 2,400 agencies in 21 states, East Africa, and Haiti, also maintains partnerships with corporations that supply bulk loads when available. Volunteers are needed to help repackage bulk food items, distribute food, and fulfill core roles like building and equipment maintenance, bookkeeping, front desk reception, and volunteer group leading. Donating time and volunteering hours is tremendously helpful, Hodel told Farm Week, adding that volunteer support is especially needed in northern locations such as Illinois, where Midwest Food Bank operates facilities in Morton, Peoria, and Normal, because many regular volunteers travel to warmer states during the winter. Both food banks reported donations also make a big difference. Daly said monetary contributions are one of the easiest ways for people to help, as the need for food remains high. Hodel added donated dollars help Midwest Food Bank cover basic costs like fuel, insurance, and keeping its facilities running, which allows the organization to get donated food to local pantries. Less than 1% of our total costs are administrative, so 99.3 cents of every dollar goes to getting food to somebody that's in need, Hodel said. Looking ahead, Daly and Hodel said the priority is to keep food moving to meet community needs. Daly said Eastern Illinois Food Bank will continue showing up for families and encouraging community involvement through donations, volunteering, spreading awareness, and food drives. Hodel said Midwest Food Bank's aims to bring in as much donated food as possible and redistribute it to partner agencies at no cost. We're continuing into a time where there is some economic and financial uncertainty for a lot of people, Hodel said. We have a tremendous opportunity and responsibility to try to give back and take care of our neighbors. Continuing on the front page, two students draft vape disposal bill. Pontiac. A bill drafted by two Illinois high school students would require producers of electronic smoking devices like vapes to manage the disposal of the devices through stewardship programs. The programs would collect used smoking devices and recycle or safely dispose of the parts. Producers can either establish their own stewardship program or, with other producers, form a statewide producer responsibility organization, PRO, to establish a group program. Producers would also be required to finance the programs and inform consumers of their disposal options. Andrew Diaz and Allison Hovanick, students at Pontiac High School in Central Illinois, worked with Representative Kelly Cassidy, Democrat Chicago, and the Illinois Environmental Council to draft and introduce the bill. The students came up with the idea through an assignment in a government class. As we kind of realized that it's a widespread problem and that there are vapes all over the environment, we ended up deciding that we wanted to kind of make this legislation, Hovanick said, emphasizing the longevity of the bill if it is passed into law. It's not just something that will just kind of go away after a while. Meeting a need. Electronic smoking devices, also known as e-cigarettes or vapes, pose environmental and public health risks due to the batteries, metals, plastics, and hazardous substances such as nicotine in them, said Jen Walling, CEO of the IEC, a Springfield-based organization that represents environmental groups and nonprofits. As they are not recyclable, due to the materials, most devices end up in landfills. Because of their growing popularity and single-use nature, they are increasing concern among environmental activists. The stewardship program proposed in the bill would operate similarly to other waste disposal initiatives like those for electronics. The goal is to provide an incentive for consumers and producers to care about the disposal of the devices, Walling said. I just think that there are consumers that care about this, and there will be efforts by the industry to try to meet certain goals where they need to collect these, so they're going to go out of their way to try and get more, Walling said. That might mean different education or different incentives that they offer consumers, or, you know, maybe just putting it in convenient places for people to be able to dispose of them. The bill provides no enforcement provisions. Brand owners, as the primary owners of manufacturers of the devices, would be required to establish a program or join a PRO within 2 years of the bill's effective date. If the brand owner cannot be identified or isn't subject to state jurisdiction, the responsibility falls to the importer, then the distributor, then the seller. The programs must be financed by the producers or PROs and are subject to approval by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Producers out of compliance could be subject to a civil penalty of up to $10,000. The bill development. Diaz and Hovanick settled on their idea after they were tasked with creating a project that would impact their community. Through discussions with their parents and teacher, Paul Ritter, they decided to draft a piece of legislation about vape disposal. The pair first reached out to Cassidy in the fall, who directed them to work with the IEC on drafting the bill. I'm concerned about a lot of different impacts of vaping, to be perfectly honest with you, Cassidy said. These batteries are just getting thrown into the garbage. There's a lot of reasons to want to control these products. For Cassidy, working with the students on an issue she already concerned about was no barrier, she said. We definitely want legislators to know it's something that the youth does care about. It's something that we want to change, Hovanick said. We talk about it a lot. I know, especially like when you come you become seniors and when we go into college, like vapes are such a widely talked about concept and representatives and centers don't really know that. The pair said they are deeply motivated to accomplish their goal. It's definitely something that taught us that we need to, like, think about what we're doing and put intent in everything we're doing, Hovanek said. Everything you put into something, you most likely will get out, and I feel like the experience, it's kind of just, it's life-changing, honestly. Cassidy filed the bill January 29th. It was referred to the committee on February 2nd and is awaiting a hearing. It truly is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in this class, Diaz said. It really is an eye-opening experience because you will relearn more about the government in this class than you ever will in civics. Continuing on the front page, GOP Senate hopefuls press case to flip Durbin's seat red. Springfield. If the Democratic primary to replace retiring U.S. Senator Dick Durbin has been the main event in Illinois politics over the past year, the Republican contest has largely played the undercard. But at least for one night, the race finally came under the bright lights. During an hour-long debate hosted by ABC 7 Chicago in partnership with Univision and the League of Women Voters on Wednesday, February 11th, three candidates in the six-person field pitched themselves as best equipped to flip the seat red after more than four decades in Democratic hands. The candidates, information technology professional Casey Chelbeck, corporate attorney Janine Evans, and former Illinois Republican Party chairman Don Tracy, stopped short of criticizing President Donald Trump directly, but registered their disagreement with his call to nationalize voting and his approach to tariffs. The last Republican to hold Illinois Class 2 U.S. Senate seat was Senator Charles Percy, who served three terms until his defeat by then Democratic U.S. Representative Paul Simon in 1984. Simon was later succeeded by Durbin, who has held the seat since 1997. Senator Mark Kirk was the latest Republican to represent Illinois in the upper chamber, serving a single term from 2011 to 2017 and losing his re-election bid to now U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. This year, the GOP race is wide open. A January poll found 84% of primary voters were undecided. Tracy led the field with just 6% support, while no other candidate registered more than 3% support. Tracy, a Springfield attorney who served as party chair from 2021 to 2024, said the open contest presents a terrific opportunity for the GOP to win back a statewide office, but it will not be easy in a state that became safely Democratic in recent federal elections. It will be an uphill dogfight because the Democrats will have a lot more money than the Republican candidate, Tracy, an unsuccessful 2010 GOP candidate for lieutenant governor, said, and for that reason, it is certainly no job for a political novice. Tracy is mostly self-funding his campaign, having loaned himself $2 million in August. He had roughly the same amount on hand at the beginning of the year, according to federal campaign finance reports, placing him far above the other candidates in the race. Evans, a Chicago attorney who specializes in antitrust law, was his closest competitor, starting the year with nearly $300,000 on hand, after raising more than $500,000, about 80% of it is self-funded. Chelbeck, a native of Poland who immigrated to the U.S. as a teenager in the late 1960s, was an unsuccessful candidate for the GOP nominations for U.S. Senate in 2020 and 2022. He self-funded to the tune of about $100,000. Unlike Tracy and Chelbeck, Evans' name was never appeared on the ballot before. She used that to cast herself as the political outsider in the race. "It's time for a fresh face of the Republican Party in Illinois," Evans said. "I'm ready to work hard to motivate people with conservative values across our entire state to come out and vote in November." None of the three candidates directly answered when asked to identify an area in which they disagreed with Trump, who has lost Illinois by double-digit margins in the three consecutive elections. A recent poll placed Trump's overall approval rating at just 39% in Illinois, though 84% of Republican voters approved of his job performance. However, disagreements with the president emerged when specific topics came up. Evans said tariffs imposed by Trump achieved some good results, but acknowledged she's a free market economist who believes they should only be used in specific situations or to achieve certain goals in the short term. Tracy said the U.S. has been subsidizing the world, including China and Europe, for way too long, but the jury's still out on if Trump's tariff regime will achieve its policy aims of more equitable trade deals and the onshoring of manufacturing jobs. Chelbeck said tariffs are a tool that shouldn't be used in an arbitrary fashion. After the court ruled 6-3 that he didn't have the emergency power to impose many sweeping tariffs, Trump signed an executive order Friday night that enabled him to bypass Congress and impose a 10% tax on imports from around the world. Those tariffs would be limited to just 150 days unless they are extended legislatively. All three candidates said they would support a proposal that would require voters to present valid photo identification to vote, but stop short of supporting Trump's recent call to nationalize elections, which are run by states under the U.S. Constitution. "With 50 states, it's hard to hack," Tracy said. Evans said she sees some room for federal standards, but supports states running their own elections. Chelbeck also stressed the importance of institutions like the United Nations and NATO that have come under attack by Trump and some Republicans in recent years. "We have to be careful as far as removing our relationship with the rest of the world," Chelbeck said. "We have to make sure that international institutions are preserved because it serves our interests." The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 per hour since 2009, while Illinois has been $15 for about a year. All three major Democratic candidates in the race have called for the federal wage to increase anywhere from $17 to $25, but the Republicans said they're just fine leaving it as is. Tracy said he was concerned that the wage increase would impact employment opportunities for teenagers and developmentally disabled people. "It's the bottom rung of the success ladder, and that's why the focus is misplaced on the minimum wage," Tracy said. "We need to be focusing on real wages." Tracy also said new requirements for food assistance in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act signed by Trump last year were long overdue, citing too many able-bodied Americans out of labor force living off the welfare. Evans said she would propose to peel back regulations and taxes that burden companies instead of raising the price floor. Evans and Tracy each said they would not support a national abortion ban and leave that decision to individual states. Chelbeck did not answer the question. All support the U.S. staying in the U.N. and NATO. Tracy said he supported Trump's pardons of people convicted of crimes connected to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, which disrupted the certification of Joe Biden's 2020 Electoral College victory and resulted in injuries to more than 100 police officers and extensive physical damage to the building. Evans sidestepped the question, saying, "It's 2026, I'm moving forward." Chelbeck said he did not support the pardons. Chelbeck, Evans, and Tracy were chosen to participate based on factors such as fundraising and having a functioning campaign website. R. Carey Caparelli, Pamela Denise Long, and Jimmy Lee Tillman II also are seeking the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. Early voting has commenced, and the primary election is March 17th. Our next article, poll, Americans believe the powerful get a pass. Americans believe that wealthy and powerful people are rarely held accountable, a new Reuters-Ipsos poll found after the release of millions of records on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's connections in elite U.S. businesses and political circles. Some 69% of respondents in the four-day poll, which concluded on Monday, said their views were captured very well or extremely well by a statement that the Epstein files show that powerful people in the U.S. are rarely held accountable for their actions. Another 17% said the statement described their views somewhat well, while 11% said it didn't reflect their thinking. Among both Republicans and Democrats, more than 80% said the statement described their thinking at least somewhat well. Under congressional orders, the U.S. Justice Department has released troves of documents that tie the late financier to a range of prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, both before and after he pleaded guilty in 2008 to prostitution charges, including soliciting an underage girl. Epstein's 2019 death in a Manhattan jail cell following his arrest on charges of sex trafficking of minors was ruled a suicide. The scandal has proven a persistent political headache for President Donald Trump, who long fanned the flames of suspicion around Epstein and has been dogged by criticism that his administration was failing to fully disclose all that the U.S. government knew about the case. The disclosures have started to cause the downfall of prominent people. Executives at Goldman Sachs and Hyatt Hotels have resigned. Others have retained powerful posts. Trump's Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick apparently visited Epstein's private island for lunch in 2012 and invited him to a fundraiser in 2015 for Hillary Clinton, Trump's Democratic rival in the 2016 presidential election, emails show. Dr. Mehmet Oz, Trump's administrator of the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, emailed an invitation to a Valentine's Day party in 2016 to Epstein, the Justice Department documents show. Neither Lutnick or Oz is accused of wrongdoing. The Republican president, who socialized extensively with Epstein in the 1990s and 2000s, has denied any knowledge of the financier's crimes and says he broke off ties in the early 2000s before Epstein's plea deal. While Americans generally have a low expectation that elites will be held accountable, they are somewhat split along partisan lines on how much longer the nation will dwell on the Epstein affair. Asked if their views were described by the statement that it's time for the country to move on, I'm talking about the Epstein files, 67% of Republican respondents in the poll said this captured their thinking at least somewhat well, while only 21% of Democrats said the same. The Reuters Ipsos poll conducted online and nationwide gathered responses from 1,117 U.S. adults and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points. Our next article, East Coast braces for potential blizzard. Warnings cascade ahead of storm that may dump 1 to 2 feet of snow. New York. Snow and rain began falling Sunday across parts of the East Coast, the first jabs of an intense winter storm expected to wallop the region through the day and overnight, with blizzard alerts and weather warnings buzzing in communities from Maryland to Massachusetts. The National Weather Service said 1 to 2 feet of snow was possible in many areas, along with heavy winds and potential flooding in certain spots. Blizzard warnings have been issued by the Weather Service in New York City and Long Island, Boston, and coastal communities in New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. Emergency declarations were issued in New York and New Jersey ahead of the storm as officials mobilized readiness efforts. It's been a while since we've had a major nor'easter, the major blizzard of this magnitude across the Northeast, said Cody Snell, a meteorologist at the service's Weather Prediction Center. This is definitely a major winter storm and a major impact for this part of the country, he said. The Weather Service said the storm could begin as rainfall in some places before worsening. Some of the heaviest snow is projected to fall overnight Sunday, with as much as 2 inches of snow per hour accumulating at times in some areas before tapering off by Monday afternoon. The Weather Service warned that the storm, with gusts up to 55 miles an hour, could cause whiteout conditions that will make travel treacherous and potentially life-threatening. The strong winds and weight of snow on tree limbs may down power lines and could cause sporadic power outages. The Weather Service in Boston warned of a potentially historic destructive storm southeast of the Boston-Providence corridor, writing on X that it was very concerned about heavy snow and winds causing power outages. In New York City, Mayor Zohran Mamdani warned of wet, heavy snow incoming, potentially 2 feet, and said city officials are instituting a travel ban that would close roads to all non-essential traffic from 9 p.m. Sunday until noon on Monday. These blizzard conditions, New York City has not faced a storm of this scale in the last decade, he said at a news conference Sunday. We're asking New Yorkers to avoid all non-essential travel. Please, for your safety, stay home, stay inside, and stay off the road. He has also canceled in-person and virtual classes for city schools on Monday, calling it the first old-school snow day since 2019. And to kids across New York City, you have a very serious mission if you choose to accept it. Stay cozy, he said. In addition to their robust plow operations, city officials have recruited people to shovel snow on foot, some of whom will begin work Sunday night to get an early start on the first wave of snowfall, Mamdani said. Meanwhile, outreach workers have also been out working to coax homeless New Yorkers off the street and into shelters and various warming centers. More than 3,500 flights were canceled across the U.S. as of Sunday afternoon, according to the flight tracking website FlightAware. With the storm zeroing in, John Berlinghieri scrapped plans for a family trip to Puerto Rico to prepare his company, Barrington Snow Management, for what could well be a mammoth task clearing snow from millions of square feet of asphalt surrounding shopping malls and industrial parks along Long Island. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.